everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Midwest Madness, your true crime cult conspiracy and cryptid podcast. I'm Emily.
And I'm Danielle. And if you listen to this on more than one speed, it's going to sound really, really fast.
Why? Did I just speak really fast?
You're like, this is Midwest Madness. I'm Emily.
I do get told I speak really fast.
People constantly think when I say the word dad that I'm saying the word dog. Constantly.
That's weird.
I've had four people this week because I've been like, oh yeah, my dad had back surgery. They're like, your dog? And I'm like, no, my dad. And it's happened since I was in like high school, so I don't know why that is.
When I was in Europe and I said bag, nobody knew what I was talking about, so I had to finally start saying tote.
That's hilarious.
I was like, when I went to the Sleep Token concert, I wanted to get, like, they had a tote bag. And me and Jenny wanted to have something to put our merch in.
Right.
Also, interesting, really fun fact.
Yeah.
They don't have bag policies over there because you can't have a gun.
Oh my God, it's a bliss. That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's like super easy to go in and out. Yeah. Crazy.
I mean, I know Europe has its problems too, but God, that's so nice.
Yeah. Oh, we were laughing beside this point. But anyway, yeah. So I was like, oh, and can I also get a bag? And she was like, a what? I was like, the bag? She's like, I was like, the tote. She was like, oh, yes. I was like, okay.
You're like, we're both speaking English.
I was like, the bag, the thing you put stuff, whatever, a tote.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I was with a friend today who said the word toast, and she was like, oh, she was talking to her daughter. She goes, oh, do you want some toast? And I was like, Jesus, Melissa. That was the most Minnesotan toast I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah.
Toast? All right. So, are you ready for my story?
Yeah. Danielle's is going to be pretty short this week, too.
Mine is also not very long. Hers is
final. She's got finals this week, so.
Yeah, so I'm a little more preoccupied with that than anything else. So, on August 23rd, 1992.
Wait. Do we want to talk about the guy, the Wisconsin dad, really fast?
Oh, we could. We certainly could.
Super quick?
Yeah. So, Ryan Borgwart.
You just did his story, like,
last week.
Really?
Yeah, it came out last week.
Oh, my God.
Like, okay, 2 weeks from when we recorded.
Okay.
Last week from when we're recording, 2 weeks ago from when this
is recording.
Out. Yes.
Okay. So it was the last episode to drop.
My last episode, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he heard my podcast and he turned himself on you guys.
That's totally it.
So allegedly, from what I have read, because I've read a couple of articles about it, he had been in contact with police because police
for a while, right?
For like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He had paddled his kayak out onto the lake with a child's floaty boat, and then he had left his boat in the lake and then used the child's boat to like go in. Took an e-bike for 80 miles into Michigan, and then went north from Michigan into Canada, and then went further east, and then flew over to Europe.
And I saw that he picked that lake because it's the deepest lake in Wisconsin.
Yes. Yep, I saw that too. Also, he said that he felt he had no other choice, but I don't know, like, what the end goal was here, because he wasn't going to get the insurance money. His wife would have for life insurance, unless he had a way to, like, siphon that out. I don't really know. But police had been in contact with him for, like, 2 weeks, like, trying to convince him to come home. He had sent like a picture and was like, I'm alive, I'm fine, it's not a big deal, whatever. And they were like working really hard to get him to turn himself in. He ended up doing so. He flew into, I think, LaGuardia, and then he flew home, and then he turned himself into police. He, as of the last article I read, is still in custody, I think, because I think there's like a $500,000 bail.
I just can't imagine how his family feels.
His wife has filed for divorce and full custody of the children.
Okay, good.
So, which is not a big surprise.
I mean, just like,
I don't think I would.
I hope those kids get into therapy, because I don't know how you process that.
Yeah.
Those emotions.
Like, my dad abandoned me pretending he was dead.
So I thought he was dead. He was
dead for like 3 weeks.
And then I find out he's alive and he just wanted me to think he was dead, which is like almost
super fucked up.
Worse in my opinion.
And then it has been confirmed that the guy in the TikTok video is was not him.
Okay.
Yes. So just a crazy coincidence there, because that guy looked very similar.
Yeah.
And for him to be, and he was actually in Georgia, the country, not the state.
Yep.
So
cool. Well, I just thought we would
give that an update. I remember, if I missed anything super important, my bad.
I did post the article on our Facebook page.
He has been charged with obstruction and fraud, I think. I don't remember everything. There was like a list on one article and then I couldn't find that article again. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Go ahead. Right.
Sorry. My story this week is about 21-year-old Tammy Zawicki, who left Evanston, Illinois on August 23rd, 1992 to head back to college in Grinnell, Iowa. The school that she went to was Grinnell College, a small liberal arts college, and she was going to school as a double major in art history and Spanish. She even spent the spring of her junior year, which was the year before, in Spain. She was in Evanston dropping off one of her brothers at his college. So she had left their family home, dropped him off, and then was heading to her school. Tammy was blonde with green eyes and was the only girl in her family of four children, born to Joanne and Hank Zawicki. She had two older brothers and one younger brother. Tammy grew up in Greenville, South Carolina, but had been living in Marlton, New Jersey when she wasn't living in Iowa for school. So for a minute, I was very confused because I was like, why does she have two homes that are not, you know, like with her family? But it turns out that her family had moved from South Carolina up to New Jersey. And so her family was living in New Jersey. So when she wasn't in school, that's where she was.
Because
I feel like back in the 90s and even the early 2000s, doing year-round school was not really a thing. You know, like you would go home for the summers.
Yeah.
Whereas now a lot of students will
take
just
summer classes.
Year-round it.
Yeah.
You know.
I year-rounded it.
Yeah. I do too, but not full semester.
No, yeah, I don't either. Not so, in the summer, but
yeah. So Tammy's hobbies included soccer and photography, and her friends and family described her as athletic, upbeat, and energetic. Her dream was to be a sports photographer. So later in the day, yeah, I was like, oh, this would be right up Emily's alley. They would have been friends.
Yeah.
So later in the day on the 23rd, an Illinois state trooper found Tammy's car and ticketed it, that's a really hard word to say, as being abandoned. The car, a white 1985 Pontiac T1000, had broken down and been left on the side of the road. The next day, the car was towed by Illinois State Police. And on that evening of August 24th, Tammy's mom called Illinois State Police and reported her daughter as missing. Sadly, the Illinois police did not take the report seriously for several days, and the police had a theory that she had run off with a boyfriend, despite there being zero evidence of her having a boyfriend.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So I always hate that story, but it's a tale as old as time, unfortunately.
It's always gross.
Yeah.
It always makes me so mad.
And it's interesting, too, because we cover a lot of, like, missing men as well, and it's hardly ever, like, oh, he ran off with a girlfriend.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. It's
like he just left.
Yeah.
But the girl is always running off with a boyfriend.
Yeah, she was going to run away with her.
I just realized that.
Non-existent boyfriend, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty gross. So if either of my siblings ever go missing, the hell I will raise. I'll probably get arrested at some point, like, to be completely honest with you. So when Tammy's car was searched, police and her family noticed that some of her property was missing, including a camera, which was a Canon 35mm, a Loris musical watch that had a green umbrella on the face and a green band, and then the watch played the song Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
No.
And then a soccer patch club from St. Giles Soccer Club in Greenville, South Carolina, which, again, is where she grew up. On September 1st, 1992, Tammy's body was found along I-44 in Lawrence County, Missouri. This is a more rural part of Missouri located between Springfield and Joplin. Tammy had been stabbed to death with 7 or 8 stab wounds, and she was found in the same clothing that she had been wearing when she went missing. The trucker that found Tammy's body gave police 2 different stories of how he found her body or like what he was doing. The first was that he pulled over to go to the bathroom, and the second was that he had pulled over to cover the bed of his truck with a tarp because it looked like it was supposed to rain. In both stories, he told police that he noticed what he thought was a large bundle on the side of the road and smelled something, quote, unusual, end quote, which prompted him to go and look.
Sorry, can I ask again, how long was she missing?
So from her mom reported her missing on the 24th, and then she was found on the 1st.
Oh, so pretty fast.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like a weekish.
Yeah, yeah.
Tammy's body was wrapped in a red blanket and was wrapped then also in duct tape to keep her like in the blanket. All of the stab wounds were around Tammy's heart, and she ended up dying from internal bleeding.
Ugh, God.
Tammy had also been sexually assaulted. The police reported people reported to police seeing a tractor trailer truck parked next to Tammy's car between 3:10 p.m. and 4 p.m. on the 23rd. The truck was described as having a faded, rusty orange stripe around the center, and the driver appeared to be a white male with dark, bushy hair. He appeared to be between the ages of 35 and 40 and just over 6 feet tall. So the FBI ended up picking up this case, I think, because it happened on an interstate.
Yeah.
So naturally they're going to be involved in that. And they dispersed flyers right away about Tammy's murder in the area. There have been several suspects in the case, and they have been questioned, but no arrest has ever been made. The most likely suspect that had been talked to was a trucker named Lonnie Barbrot, who again was questioned and had fingerprints and hair taken, but was released when no direct evidence was found. Oh my gosh, my throat just got super dry.
Oh,
I'm so sorry. So his fingerprints and his hair did not match anything found at the scene, but Lonnie allegedly gave a watch to his wife that looked like Tammy's, but FBI was unable to recover the watch. Lonnie died in 2002 without being charged for Tammy's murder. In 2015, FBI announced that they had opened a consultation with the VIDOCQ is how you spell it.
Okay.
Society in Philadelphia. I have no idea what that is. I would love to look into it more. I just didn't have the time today. So if anybody knows what that is, or if you know what that is, have you heard of them?
Mm-mm.
So it sounds like some big like consulting group that works on cold cases, but I don't know that for a fact. And they are located in Philadelphia. There is also a Facebook group called, quote, Who Killed Tammy Zawicki, end quote, that is run by 2 armchair detectives, and they are in contact with Tammy's mom. In 2019, friends of Tammy's from Greenville, South Carolina, and the Facebook group organized an annual motorcycle ride known as the Tammy Ride, which takes place on September 3rd. It was also believed that Clark Perry Baldwin, a serial killer trucker, was briefly suspected in Tammy's case but has been ruled out, although police and FBI have not elaborated as to why. Have you heard of him?
Mm-mm.
Me either, so I'm going to have to
write him down.
Look into that one.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw him on my list. There is a $50,000 reward for any information that leads to an arrest in Tammy's case, and the case is still considered open.
Damn.
So that is my unsolved, which I don't usually do.
No, we don't.
You usually do those.
Yeah, I know.
You like those, so.
I don't like them, but.
But, I mean, I find them fascinating.
Yes, I like to be able to put my own thoughts into it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I think the hardest part is that, like, it's on an interstate. It literally could have been anybody. You know, there's just so much possibility for it to be literally anybody.
Yeah.
So hopefully this one gets solved. I think there's a better chance of Jody Huizentrout getting solved.
Yeah.
Than I do of this.
Well, more publicity too.
Right. And then also I saw there's some new JonBenet Ramsey stuff.
I did see that too as well.
I listened to a podcast about it the other day, but hopefully do you think that one will ever get solved?
JonBenet? Yeah. Yeah.
I think so too. I think the right person needs to get their hands on it.
Yep.
So my sources are FBI.gov, Wikipedia.org, and then the Des Moines Register.
And just really quick before we sign off, we will be taking a hiatus.
1 week.
Around the holidays. So we will be back after the new year. So just to give you guys a heads up on that.
Yeah. And happy Christmas Eve, you guys.
Yep. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Yep.
Happy New Year. And
all the things.
Our Monica, socials. Monica,
Kwanzaa.
Our MW Madness podcast on Instagram and Gmail and MW Madness podcast group on Facebook.
Yes.
Cool. All right, everybody. Have a great holiday and we will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye.